Well, hey, how's it going? Yeah, what's going on? Thank you so much for joining us. This is the Venice Voice. On this episode of the Venice Voice podcast, it is my great honor to be joined by iQueen, also known as Isis. She is the lead singer for the band Royal Distortion and Barbed Wire Dolls. We talk a little bit about what it was like for her to tour for 7 years with the same band, how they transitioned into their current project, and a little bit about her relationship with her lead guitarist, Pin Doll, and why she came to Venice in the first place. But first, I'd just like to remind you that this podcast is for you. So if you'd like to be interviewed or if you want to talk about a product you're working on or maybe bring up an issue that's important to you, anything that's going on in your world, shoot me an email at ron@venicevoice.com and we'll get it on the show. Now, without further ado, here's iQueen.
One, two, check, 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 check. One, two, 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 one, two. Hey, yeah, check one, two, one, two, yeah, two, yeah. Two, check.
What's up, Isis?
Hi.
Hi, Ron. Is it iQueen or can I call you Isis?
You can call me Isis, but that's because I allow you to. It's officially
it's your name.
iQueen, just like it's Ron Jaron, but I'm going to call you
wow,
Ron.
Wow, you didn't pronounce my name right. That's funny. I like that.
Why? How's your name spelled?
It's a hard G.
Garen?
Garen, that's correct.
Garen.
Yes, Garen.
Is that German?
No.
Yeah, I think you look German.
You think I look German?
No, I didn't think you looked German.
Well, what do you think I look like?
Like Scandinavian.
Scandinavian. Well, yeah. I know. I've gotten that sometimes. I'm mostly Irish.
Damn it, I was going to say Irish.
You should have went with your first impression. No, my name probably was Mick Garen or O'Garen or G-U-E-R-I-N, but apparently, according to some of my family members, when my ancestors first came to America, the Irish weren't very welcome, like on the East Coast, so mm-hmm. they changed their name so that they wouldn't be misconstrued as Irish. So the initial incarnation of my name is Irish.
So you're one of the first Americans then?
I'm one of the... No. I'm not one of the first Americans.
No, I mean your family is. Therefore, you are.
I suppose. I really don't know a whole lot about my father's side of the family.
What about your mother's side?
My mother's side, she's mostly English. She was born in Tennessee. She's got a lot of Southern roots. And their side of the family is initially English and European, that type of thing. So I'm a white boy.
Right on, white boy.
I'm so glad you're here. Thank you very much for sitting down and talking with me.
Yeah. Well, we did have fun the other day. You know,
we did.
We had a great photo shoot with
we
you.
We absolutely did. Those pictures came out incredible.
I know. I can't wait to get them out to the world.
Yeah, me too. I'm going to post some of them on the podcast page.
Okay.
And so I'll highlight one of the photos for this episode so that we can maybe show some people. Because I think they'll be worthwhile to see.
Right on.
Right on, man.
Right on.
I got so many questions for you, but I guess I'll start by the time that we first met. I was thinking about it recently. It was 2010 when you guys first came to America.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're from Crete?
No, I'm from Greece. Well, I was born in Athens.
Uh-huh.
And I went. My teenage years was in Athens. My family is from the west coast of Greece, from an island called Kefalonia, or Cephalonia, as they say in English. And then when I met my guitarist, Pin, he was from Crete, and I was working in Crete, and I loved Crete so much that I would cry every time I left the island. So I really had a connection to that place. So I do feel Cretan. In that way.
You feel Cretan.
Well, Cretan from the island, maybe not.
Maybe,
you know,
no.
And then the Cretan side of me comes out on stage.
Yeah, I've seen that side of
but
you
that
on stage.
That word actually comes from the Cretans, because when St. Paul first, back in the day, St. Paul first came to the island of Crete, he thought that the people were so barbaric that he... You know, that's where the word Cretans come from. Cretans are like the southerners of Greece, we have like the same reputation as Sicily, for example. So,
and how would you describe that reputation? I know what I think.
You know, it's kind of lawless in that sense. You know, the people kind of govern what goes on, especially in the villages. They have guns for hunting purposes, of course, but they have guns, you know. Up until probably about 10 years ago, it was very known for them to have duels. It's just kind of old school in that way, you know.
Do you think that maybe that lawlessness also comes from the fact that they're just so isolated on that island and they have their sort of self-governing? And
For sure, because it's a big enough island. It's the biggest island in Greece.
Right.
So, you know, it's not like some sort of small island where, you know, they don't exactly, I don't know, it's just, it's big enough where, you know, they have their west siders and their east siders and, like, you know, they consider themselves sometimes probably their own country in that sense, because they have the, you know, their own produce. You know, we have the biggest olive oil export in all of Europe. So, you know, it's self-sustainable in that sense. So, yeah.
Interesting. And you grew up in Athens. So your like formative years were in the city.
Always. I've always been a city girl, actually. I was born in Athens until I was 3. And then my parents divorced. And then my mom took me and my sister to Australia, where my aunt was. And we stayed with her for 6 months and went up north from Melbourne to Sydney and ended up living in Sydney. And I went to primary school and my preteens were in Sydney, Australia. And then when I turned 13, we moved back to Greece and I finished my high school years there.
So that's where that little bit of an accent comes from. I can hear it come out a little bit when you talk about Australia.
Yeah, it's weird, my accent. I have no control over it. Sometimes it'll have like an American twang to it. Sometimes it'll go totally British. And sometimes if I talk about Australia or I think of Australia or I'm talking to an Australian, it will just start coming out Aussie.
Were you a rebellious person when you were growing up? I mean, I have a lot of friends who are Australian. My neighbors right across the way are Australian. And that combined with this lawlessness that you talked about, do you think that sort of informed who you are as a person? I mean, were you kind of a rebellious kid?
I think I was rebellious just because, you know, I had my own issues. I don't think it had much to do with what country I was growing up in, you know. I think it more had to do with the fact that I isolated myself from people, you know. I wasn't one to conform. I wasn't much for school. I had very select friends. You know, my parents divorced when I was 3. That's, you know, a lot of daddy issues involved there, so.
Yeah, me too. Me too. It's not often that you hear a man talk about daddy issues, but I definitely have them. My father left when I was very young as well, and it's always something that's informed what I've done and how I've behaved and how I see the world and how I see relationships. It informed everything about me. And it wasn't until recently, actually, over the past maybe 7 or 8 years, where I decided to unravel or reveal some of those things in my life that I was carrying around with me. So I get it, you know.
It's important to do that. I mean, most issues that we have as people and even our personalities, it roots down to issues with our parents. And once we can overcome those, then we can truly set our minds free. I mean, everybody, whether they've grown up having, you know, all the riches in the world, great parents, so forth, everybody has parent issues. You know, and that's the one thing that you really need to overcome as a human being in order to set yourself free and be who you want to be.
I couldn't agree more. And I think it's an ongoing thing, too. I think that more is revealed the more I address those things.
Yeah. You know?
And I'm faced with situations in relationships with my family and with people that I'm close to where more and more things come up. But I'm better able to deal with those things now that I've kind of addressed them, you know.
Yeah.
So, not too rebellious.
I mean, I got into a lot of trouble.
Did you get into trouble? Did you get arrested when you were a kid?
Suspended.
Did you get out and party with all your friends when you were young?
Not in Australia, I didn't, because it's got way too many laws in Australia. But when I went back to Greece, it's pretty, you know, it's pretty free, you know, when it comes to age restrictions. There aren't really any. You could buy a pack of cigarettes at any age, can drink at any age, you can party as long as you look over a certain age, you know. So I would go out and party. I would work.
What kind of stuff did you do when you were working?
I started working when I was 14 because when we moved back to Greece, you know, my mom was at that age where she could retire soon. And so it was very difficult for her to find a job. And so, you know, she didn't ask me to work, but I didn't have my own money. So I would go and work and I'd help out here and there, of course. But I started working when I was 14 and at a behind a bar at a beer restaurant. So I had to learn like 80 different types of beers, and I hated beer. I still hate beer. That didn't help me whatsoever to actually enjoy beer. My boyfriend at the time was working there, and so, you know, I had an in with him, so they hired me, even though I said I was 17 when I was actually 14. That started on the weekends, and then later on I'd start working at bars and clubs and other places, and I would juggle that with high school. And so I hated high school. I hated school in general. So I preferred to have worked as opposed to going to school. But in Greece, you have to actually finish the full run of high school to get your diploma. So that was all I was interested in. I was great at writing cheat sheets. I passed high school because of my amazing capabilities of cheats. I came up with the most brilliant ideas.
Well, I guess that's one way to, you know, pass school and show your intellect and your ingenuity.
I thought so. I thought I deserved it 100%. I spent a lot of time on those cheats.
Do you think that if you'd actually studied,
no,
you would?
No. Living in Australia, we never lived in a Greek community. We never lived in, you know, around other Greeks. So I lost my Greek very quickly, the language. So, you know, when we moved back to Greece, I had to start from the bottom again, you know, from zero. And my school was, you know, taught in the Greek language. So I am a Taurus, and Tauruses can be quite lazy when it comes to certain things. So when it came to education, I was very lazy and it just did not appeal to me. I had more interest in fighting with the teachers and having debates about things that I thought I knew about, which I still probably think I know about. And they were more entertaining than actually listening to them talk to me about something that was written in a book. I mean, I love reading books, but when it came to things that I just didn't have anything, you know, it's just, what am I going to do with most of the stuff that you teach in high school, you know? I wasn't interested in becoming a lawyer or a doctor.
Sure,
so.
Yeah, and I 100% agree. I much prefer human interaction, conversation, debate, than memorization of topics that I could honestly care less about, you know.
Yeah.
Most education systems in the world are designed to create obedient workers in a industrial setting. So that's not what I wanted to do. I was a creative person. I wanted to be a painter or an artist or an actor.
Well, and that's great that you knew what you wanted to do, because I had no idea what I wanted to do.
Really?
No, I had no talents at all. I was never good at anything. I wasn't a musician. I wouldn't even know what to do with a paintbrush. I, you know, couldn't, you know, I wasn't a writer. I mean, there was nothing that I did. I didn't really play any sports. I had no talents. And that was a huge frustration for me. And I was very aggro teenager because of that. And I would scream and cry to my mom all the time saying, why my sister goes to the arts, you know, the Institute of Music. She, you know, makes clothes for my Barbies. You know, she's the best and I'm useless, you know. And a lot of that came down to the fact that I just didn't know my purpose.
And so then you found your purpose.
I just went from job to job until I finally got a job working on one of the islands, which was Crete. Actually, my sister was working at that island, being a manager of a water sports on the beach and down the south coast of Crete. And I went and visited her before my job started in another island that summer. So I went and visited her for 2 weeks, and it was the best 2 weeks of my life, and I loved it there. And then I went to the other island.
I just want to say thank you once again to iQueen for taking the time to speak with us today. I really enjoyed that conversation, and I hope you did too. Just a reminder, Royal Distortion is playing on Monday night at the Whiskey a Go-Go in Hollywood for the rest of the summer. If you haven't seen Isis perform, it's definitely worth your while. Go see this band. They are great. And so, once again, just a reminder, if you want to be on the show, if you want to be interviewed, if you want me to mention a product, or if you want me to bring up an issue that's important to you, shoot me an email at ron@venicevoice.com, or you can follow us on the socials at the Venice Voice Podcast. Tune in again next time when I will have another interesting human being that has some connection to this beautiful little place in which we live called Venice, California. Until next time.
My boss told me, oh, I'm having some friends come down from the North Coast. They're surfers. And they're going to hang out for the day. And I was so excited because even though I lived in Australia, you know, I lived like 2 hours from the beach. But I always thought surfing was like the coolest thing in the world, you know, because I just didn't understand how it worked. I mean, you get on a board and it goes, you know, it follows the wave, and how does it not just flip over? You know, it's like the most incredible thing to me that I could not comprehend. So they came down, and I was single too for that whole summer. So, you know, I was excited to meet some guys too, you know, who knows what would happen. And first came Pin, my guitarist in Royal Distortion, Bob Riddle. First came Pin, and he, you know, came. It was almost like it was a pageant or something. Like they didn't come all together. It was one by one. So first came Pin, and I'm like, oh, he's cute, you know. Maybe, you know, something might, you know, come together. You know, he's cute. I like him. So, okay, hi, I'm, you know, whatever, nice to meet you, blah, blah, blah. And then comes the next one. Oh, and I thought, oh, you know, he's about 27. He's probably too, you know, he probably thinks I'm too young for him. So next comes the second one, this American guy, you know, a little older than me. I'm like, oh, okay, you know, whatever. And then the next one comes, the third one, and he's my age. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, whatever. So... So I just had like immediate infatuation with Pin. I was like, okay, this guy, I like this guy. Anyway, to make a long story very, very short, we were inseparable. He went back after that day. The next day he went back, but then we started hanging out a week afterwards, and we haven't been separated in 11 years now. So, he's really opened up my whole world to all the things that I do now. He never forced me to do anything, but naturally I just started singing along with him to songs, you know, that he'd play, that he'd write, you know. Sometimes it would be for me or about other things. And, you know, I just started singing along. I was always off tune, but I would love singing along, you know. For the first couple of years, we were living in an artist commune in Crete, which he started with one of his friends that I'd met that day. And this first year that we were together, the artist commune really took off. And so we had artists from all around the world coming, including 5 members of Group Love, which is a big indie band right now that are out of LA. Each member had come on separate situations at the commune. Hannah, who is the singer, she was a painter. She wasn't even a singer now. She is now in Group Love. And each of the other members were there because they were songwriters. And they all met there, you know, and then we had everything. We had like, you know, writers and filmmakers and sculptors and whatever. It was great. It was amazing. And it opened up my eyes to the whole world. And it didn't make me feel like I could do any of those things. You know, I was just in awe to be around it. And I think I soaked up enough, you know, artistic energy that eventually over the years, you know, I'd pick up a paintbrush and I'd start painting. And, you know, me and Pin started a band just because, you know, I told him I wanted to sing after watching a Led Zeppelin documentary. And, I mean, we didn't start a Led Zeppelin cover band, but we started a punk band because, you know, I could at least focus on not being in tune all off tune all the time. And he taught me how to surf and skate, and we really worked as two people being together, you know. We really focused, you know, jumped off of each other all the time, you know, with inspirational ideas. And I don't know, it just works, you know. And ever since then, I've become a lot calmer as a person. I mean, our first album with Barbed Wire Dolls, you know, was a very aggressive political album. But that's because a lot of situations were going on with our country in Greece. And we wanted to, and you know, you write about what you know. So apart from the first album being a very aggressive album, you know, I've really come into my own person and honed in on who I am. And a lot of that has to come with, you know, finding some artistic outlet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm talking a lot.
That's okay. No, you're on a roll. It's good. There's a, I'm getting a good sense of,
yeah, well, he would, yeah, go on, finish your question.
Well, and so I think that he, from what I understand, that he brought a lot of that back with him to Greece.
That's okay. No, you're on a roll. It's good. There's a...
Yeah, I mean...
I'm getting a good sense
in the summer times,
the
he had family and friends.
It's just great to hear. And just thank you for
Santa
sharing
Monica.
It with me.
And
I know
the
pin
back in the 70s,
was fascinated with the surf and skate
every
culture.
Every summer and spend time
from
with them here.
This area.
Live in Santa Monica.
From Venice.
And he met the Z-Boys.
Well, and so I think that
he had skated with
from
them.
What I understand, that
his
he brought a lot of that back
he was with
him
the Gutierrez,
to Greece. And it influenced,
you know,
those around him, and
part
including
part of that culture, part of that lifestyle. And, you know, Pin, even being a little kid at the time, you know, he was himself was a very outgoing, rebellious type of person. So he attracted himself to those type of people. And it made a huge impression on him because at the time he was living in Singapore because his dad worked out in Singapore as an agricultural engineer. And every summer he would take back, you know, skateboards and you know, his times was skating, you know, around Dogtown and blah, blah, blah. And he created, you know, their own group out in Singapore called Radlands. And they would do the cross just like, you know, Dogtown would write Dogtown. They'd do Radlands. You know, a part of it is always, he's always come back here because of that, you know.
And that's when he brought you back.
Yeah, in 2010, when we were invited here, after we recorded our first EP with Barbed Wire Dolls, we started getting played on K-Rock. So we, not intentionally, I mean, of course, we would love to live in Venice, but, you know, the price is going up like crazy. And we just wanted to, we were just looking for a place to live, essentially. And by chance, a place opened up that was extremely affordable, right next to the canals, and we ended up living here for a year before we went on tour. But the whole idea was to come and live in Venice because for me it reminds me of Europe. You know, everyone walking around. You know, there's you know, artistic people around. There's, you know, a sense of community without needing a community. I don't know if that makes sense. Oh yeah, I've heard. Pins told me the whole progression of it from the 70s all the way up until now. I mean, I remember when we came here in 2005, we were going to go and do... Pin's a professional... Well, he was a
I feel the same
surfer,
way about Venice. And you know, when I first came here, it was because I needed an affordable place to live.
On him surfing,
and
blah, blah.
It was one of
so,
the most affordable places in Los Angeles at the time.
There.
I mean, I've lived here for over
20 years. And we came and stayed
years.
Here in Venice with
and,
some friends for 2 weeks.
At the time, no one wanted to live down here. There was no family.
There was
no
still,
dogs,
you know,
no nothing.
Gangs, and there were homeless people like everywhere, you know, not like it is now, like everywhere. And it was a little dangerous, you know, it was a little dangerous. I mean, but then when we came and moved here in 2010, you know, all that had changed. I mean,
it was
drastically.
Yeah, it was a drastic change.
In 5 years.
Very, very quickly.
And I mean, not to mention how this place was in the 80s, like you said, completely boarded up. And I mean, there were, I mean, I would love it if Penn told his story about all this, because I'm just talking through him.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping to maybe sit him down sometime.
Yeah, because if you want to know about Venice, he has amazing stories.
I'd like to hear his story. And I actually have some connections with the Docktown guys too, and they have agreed to maybe sit down.
It was a drastic change, and it happened very, very quickly.
Maybe you'll help me convince him to come and sit down.
Oh, he'll do it. He loves to talk. He'll talk longer and more than I will. You think I talk a lot? You should see him.
I know. I've had some lengthy conversations with him. He's a fascinating man.
I'm hoping to maybe sit him down sometime. I meant. I'd like to hear his story. And I actually have some connections with the Docktown guys too, and they have agreed to maybe sit down. So I'm gonna get a lot of that history as well. So maybe you'll help me convince him to come and sit down sometime. Yes, I know. I've had some lengthy conversations with him. He's a fascinating man, and I do hope I get an opportunity to sit down with him.
Yeah, I mean,
but it's interesting that you say
Venice.
That just sort of it wasn't and intentional for you to come
place.
Here because for many people,
in
including
US,
myself,
anywhere,
just
maybe New
sort
York,
of the winds,
York,
or it sounds kind of metaphysical.
York,
but I was
from there,
just
Venice
placed
is the
here.
Place that I could live. And that's
I came from San Francisco,
and I
lived in the
suburbs.
Hate at the time, and I didn't want to live there either. I just was placed there, but I found myself with like-minded people. It just felt like the gods or whatever had just placed me where I was supposed to be.
Like I said, I've just sort of been placed with...
It's terrible. That's kind of where I grew up, is in the suburbs of Northern California, which is very much
I
like the valley. But I went to college in San Francisco, and once I got into the city, that
sure.
was it. I
mean,
was never
I think
going back.
It's
and since then,
to imagine that everything,
like I said, I've just sort of been placed
is,
with like-minded
you know,
people.
Beforehand,
and I've always
but,
been drawn to and have been surrounded by artists.
Yeah,
and
you know,
really
who
grateful
am I to say
for
that they're wrong?
You know,
I'm just saying that
me feel like I'm
in my
to be somewhere.
Own perspective.
And I have
on
a feeling
this,
that
that's
kind of happened
that,
for you too. Would you say that once you started the band,
drama and I can
you were
to live in a happy,
taken on a journey
world,
of sorts?
And everything that I do has brought me fulfillment, and I feel like I'm on the right path just because I bring harmony into those situations and experiences. And my life could be very different if I choose to look at it in a different way. But I choose to look at it.
There are those that believe
in
that.
In my way. Yeah. And so everything seems like it's supposed to be, like it's meant to be. And again, I can't say if that's how it's supposed to be or if I'm creating it. But I do feel like everything can be a lot different. Just based on switching your mind and your perspective on things.
Where did you learn that? Did you think that you just developed that philosophy on your own, or did you have some influences in your life?
Penn was my influence, actually, on a lot of this stuff because, well, I mean, my parents were very hippie-like people, you know. They met in Thailand, and I was conceived in Nepal, and so they were backpacking, you know, in the 70s everywhere, and...
They were older parents?
No, they're typical. I think my mom was 28 when she had me.
Oh, okay.
You know, my dad was, I don't know, maybe he was 30.
Where did you learn that? Did you think that you just developed that
they
philosophy
just, you
on
know,
your own,
young
or did
kids,
you have some influences in your life?
You know, backpacking through Europe, I mean, through Asia, and just getting a whole different perspective on the Eastern way of thinking. So, you know, growing up, not necessarily was I put in those situations, but a lot of that, you know, kind of
and they
that
were,
energy
they were older
was
parents,
around
I'm,
me,
guessing,
you know?
No?
I mean, that energy was around me while I was being conceived, you know? So I've always been very open-minded in that way, even though my parents may not be the poster children for... my dad, not parenthood, but my mom was a great mom, but for spiritual awareness, let's put it that way. But when I met Penn, you know, again, you're going to have to talk to him about all that. He had his own journey in life where at some point he gave everything up to the world and just became like this Zen monk and started just living off of whatever life gave him. You know, he didn't, which was nothing.
For parenthood or...
And, but he survived and he went through many great, amazing experiences through that. And, you know, just being around him, he kind of balances my unawareness of how life works, you know, and helps me, you know, and vice versa, you know, we're not all a certain way, you know, we can all bounce around emotionally. But he really, I give him a lot of props for inspiring me to be the person that I am, because had I not met him, I probably would either be in jail or maybe not even exist, or, you know, have a very miserable life. So,
well, I'm grateful you guys are together. Because it has manifested itself in some beautiful music and some of the best stage performances that I've ever seen. And I'm one of those guys, you know, I've been an actor and performer and director for a long time, and I coach people for media training, and I know what a good performance is. And you guys know how to put on a show. And even I mean, not to take anything away from...
Well, I'm grateful you guys are together. I am, because it has manifested itself in some beautiful music and some of the best stage performances that I've ever seen. And I'm one of those guys, you know, I've been an actor and performer and director for a long time, and I coach people for media training, and I know what a good performance is. And you guys know how to put on a show. And even I mean, not to take anything away from the great bands that you've been playing with at the Whiskey, and there are some great bands there, but there's something different about you and him on stage that is intangible. There's just one of those things. You know, I've seen Lady Gaga perform live. I've seen Prince perform live. I used to run a club in Hollywood, not run it, but I was the head of security and ran the door there. And Prince came and did a private show, and it was for maybe 150 people.
I mean, I didn't grow up
and there was the air changed in the room when he began to perform.
That's about it.
There was just something different
there.
When it came
to singing, you know,
and sitting with you now,
but
one would not think that a performance like yours would come out of someone like you.
Premeditated.
And it's just beautiful to watch. It feels like, you know,
completely natural state.
There's a true artistry. It could be a gift. You said that you really had never had any musical training, right?
To that person on stage. On stage, it feels totally natural, you know, and nothing's forced. I can totally relate to that. I totally understand what you're talking about. I mean, if I get a camera in front of me, you know, I naturally feel like, let's make the most of it, you know. But then in the real world, you kind of feel awkward and unsure of yourself and what you're doing, you know, because sometimes you
feel
like...
Well, I can relate to that. Collaborating with someone in photography, or if I'm collaborating with people on stage, that feels like a more natural place to me than going to the grocery store or like hanging around paying bills.
My own body, what I'm able to do with it, you know, I have complete control over, you know, how I want to be portrayed in a photo shoot, you know, stuff like that. So when it comes, I mean, same with anything. I mean, if I'm making my, you know, a clothesline for, you know, a store that wants a certain look for something, you know, I have complete control of how that outcome is. But, you know, in real life, sometimes it's just a weird situation where you intend something, but sometimes it works out that it happens in a different way. And it's always to your benefit, but, you know, you just sometimes you're not sure of how the outcome's going to be. You know what you want to do and your ultimate goal, but sometimes that way that it's going to happen is completely unknown. And, you know, some people say that they have complete control over that, and I try to believe that, but at the same time, a lot of it subconsciously creates a different path that you're unsure of.
So there's a freedom there to express truth. And I mean, I remember the first time, you know, going back to when I first met you, and there was something beautiful, and I think I told you this story, there was something very beautiful about the truth that you told me the first time that we met. You said something, and then it stuck with me, because I know a lot of actors and musicians and comedians that say, yeah, you know, I'm an actor, or yeah, I want to be a singer, or something like that. You said to me, we're a band, we're going to be touring, you should come and see us. And there was no hesitation there. You just handed me your flyer, and you were like, we're a band, and we're going to be playing at the Viper Room, and you should come and see us. And you looked me right in the eye, and I was like, I believe you. I 100% believe you. And then I saw you at the Viper, and I was like, these guys are the shit. This is a true expression of an artistic expression. And of course, I was struck by the political nature of it. And there was so much passion in what you did. And it was such a contrast between the person that I had met on the sidewalk on Abbot Kinney. It was a huge contrast, and it just struck me. And it reminds me of what an artist is. And when I was growing up, and I went to San Francisco, and I had another experience like that. My mother had season tickets to all these shows, and there was one at the Curran Theater, and I remember seeing Whoopi Goldberg, of all people, and she did a one-woman show way back in the day where she would do all these characters, and it was beautiful. She owned the place, like owned it. All the characters worked. There was truth just pouring out of her. And I didn't see a woman. I didn't see a black person. I didn't see anything except for an artist.
I guess it just comes with really
there was just
not
a Whoopi
caring.
There. And it changed my perspective of what
stage,
an artist is and what they
the
do and how it
I
want
to enjoy it. I'm going
to
get what I want
to be able
to get
up and tell the truth
in
that way.
Minutes.
And I was like, I need more of that. I want to surround myself with
people,
more of those people. And
which,
that's what kind of
was
sent me on my journey. You know,
and terrible. And
I had that same type of experience when I saw you at the Viper that night. I was like, this is an expression of truth. And I don't know where that comes from, but it's something that fascinates me.
I shake the whole time, and then I just left, and I went into, you know, the lounge room, and I just sat in a corner and just couldn't think for like at least what it felt like to me was 2 hours, but it must have been like a half hour. And then Pin comes up to me, he's like, what's going on, are you okay, like what's wrong with you? I'm like, I'm not doing that ever again, I can't do that ever again. And he's like, well, was it really hard? He's like, and I'm like, yeah, that was the worst thing. He's like, well, now you know that's the worst, the hardest thing you're ever going to have to do. It's going to be all uphill from there. So get up and straighten yourself up and let's do it again, because it's not going to get any worse than that. And I was like, oh, wow. Yeah, you're right. That was the worst thing I ever had to do. And there was a couple of incidents where I would be totally mortified before going on stage. And I'd always think to myself, well, it can't be as bad as that first time I did it, so make the most of it. Just go out there and not think. And that's really been the key to everything.
Yeah, there's some real wisdom in that. I remember there's another guy who I know who is a stand-up comedian, and he was mortified about standing up and trying to make people laugh. And so he went to an open mic night, and somebody had suggested this to him, and he did it. He went up, and he had 3 minutes
on stage, because
it was an open mic
night.
And so he decided to go up and not say anything for 3 minutes, just so that he could feel what it was like to have no one laugh.
You know, I don't care.
And then he started from there.
I'm
and it was the same type of thing. He was like,
you know,
it can't get any worse than that. Now I know what it feels like to be up there. And it wasn't that bad. At least I experienced
it. And so he had that as a baseline to go from. You know what I mean?
There's wisdom in that, I think.
No, I won't do that. What will people think? No. I mean, there's a lot of things that I can look back and say, oh, you know, cringe about. And I do cringe about them. But a lot of that has helped, you know, make the person who I am, because I have those experiences.
Who cares? Right.
And, you know, that's probably what you see in some performances. You know, I see it all the time. If I, you know, I can't look at people that are uncomfortable on stage, because, you know, I'm a type of person that absorbs a lot of things that are around me, you know, and so I only like to focus on positive, you know, things that I wish to experience. So when I see uncomfortable people on stage, or people that are insecure and not sure about themselves, it obviously comes off on stage. So I always try to avoid
that. A lot of wisdom in that, my friend.
You know, when I'm on stage,
it really is.
And, you know, I
think it's a lesson that a lot of people need to learn.
I stutter, or whatever the case, maybe I forget lyrics, you know, just brush it off, you know. Fall and stay on the ground for the next 5 minutes, you know, just go with it, you know, don't make it look obvious, because you're the only one that sees that, you know, at the end of the day. And it's the truth. That's the truth about life, you know, all the insecurities, all the problems, all the mistakes that we do, we're the only ones that notice them. And then we make it such a big deal that we allow other people to see those things. Yeah, I mean, it's not dead, you know, we're just taking a break from it. I think the band just really needed a lot more help, and help that I feel like we deserve.
I knew we were like-minded people, my friend.
It didn't quite come around,
so,
you know.
Barbed wire dolls.
I don't know. It just
ran its course.
There was
you did
a
what you wanted to with it, and you needed
a
change. What happened?
I don't think any of us really understood. And we hadn't taken a break for 7 years. We just kept pushing it, just kept going.
It must be tough
to
tour for 7 years,
you know,
and live together and travel together and be together for that whole time.
Yeah, we did all live together. It was great, but, you know, people in their 20s living together, you know, not having their own cash, you know, everything going into the band, it's gonna, you know, make for some problems.
Sure.
And that wasn't the issue why we stopped the band. I think the issue was more like, you know, all our deals were done with Barbed Wire Dolls, you know, our licensing deal with Motorhead Music was over, and you know, so it was the perfect time just to like, let's take a breather, guys. And everybody wanted it. And after about a couple of weeks, me and Penn were like, let's start another band. We can't just sit around. What are we going to do? You know, this is what we've been doing for the past,
sure,
gosh knows how many years, you know. It's always been about the music. So let's just do something, some more music, you know. We had all these songs that nobody wanted to do in Barbed Wire Dolls because they were too poppy, or they had, you know, nice lyrics, or whatever the case may be. No, but at the same time, it wasn't unconscious. It was like, okay, we have these beautiful songs. Let's do something completely different from what we did with Barbed Wire Dolls, which is all about punk rock and DIY ethos, and, you know, and talk about things. You know, we have to have a political song in every album. You know, that's what's expected of us. You know, in this case, we're like, okay, we got a chance to start over. Let's just do whatever we want to do and not be expected of anything. So
it wasn't
was
a conscious choice to say, hey, we need more of
like
a mainstream rock
band. We got
these
songs, let's focus around the songs and what the songs ask for, and whatever comes out, you know, is the best thing for us, because that's what the songs really need. So we got the best musicians that we could find, which are absolutely fantastic, Kevin and Gabe. they were easy to find. So, you know, we connected easily. There was no stress. Anything that has stress is just bound to, you know, erupt in a bad way at some point. So we try to keep it stress-free and just have as much fun as possible with it, which wasn't the case with Barbed Wire Dolls. You know, we were constantly pushing our agenda with Barbed Wire Dolls. Barbed Wire Dolls was like the ultimate punk band, in my opinion. And, you know, I know my fair share of that genre of music. And I can tell you that we basically did everything correct in my mind. You know, we didn't conform to anyone's expectations of us. We talked our minds, we spoke our minds, you know, we, you know, were broke. Yeah, we had no place to live. You know, everything that came to us were donations from people. When we did finally sign with a label after doing it DIY for like 4 years, it was with Motorhead Music after Lemmy Kilmister signed us to his label. And how can you say no to Lemmy? So that's, you know, as punk as it gets, being signed by the coolest rock and roller in the world. You know, and then each album was different. You know, we kept surprising our fans. Like I said, we weren't a typical anything. We were our own thing. And that's the beauty about punk rock, in my mind, is that you're not trying to be like anybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think so.
I think, sure. And think we left a really good legacy behind, you know, whatever happens with Barbed Wire Dolls. I mean, we could do a show tomorrow. I have no idea. It's totally unknown. And that's punk rock too.
Yeah. I like the way that you've described this organic progression or transition into Royal Distortion, which is, you just wanted to do something new. You have these beautiful songs. You surrounded yourself with like-minded people.
Yeah. And now you have this. Well, you did it well.
And it seems, for sure. It's supposed to be the way it is. It feels like truth again.
Yeah, I like it. I like the way that you've described this organic progression or transition into Royal Distortion, which is, you just wanted to do something new. You had these beautiful songs. You surrounded yourself with like-minded people, and now you have this band. And yeah, it seems like it's supposed to be the way it is. It feels like truth again. And I was just surprised. I was so skeptical at first when I came to see Royal Distortion. I was like, how can Isis and Pin change into mainstream rock band? And I didn't know if it was a conscious choice or if Barbed Wire Dolls wasn't doing what you wanted it to do. And how was this going to happen? How is this going to work? And then all of a sudden, there was this new rock band up there. And of course, you as the front person still works in just like a more of a kind of a straight rock way. Just because you just have this incredible performance quality about you. And it worked. And the fact that you just did it again in kind of an organic way, I think maybe it's the way it's supposed to be, because you don't have any expectations around it. Does that make sense?
You know, sold our, you know, song to like Dove commercial or something, which I'm not opposed to either, because, you know, everything that I choose to do, I choose 100%.
Do you think that that's a hindrance? Do you think that people don't understand it?
What's best for my, you know, my creation, you know. And the only, like I said, we talked about this earlier, the only person that judges
you're
you
selling
is yourself,
out, bro. You're selling, you know, out.
I've gotten to the point where I don't care what people think about me, you know. I put out what I want to put out. And, you know, if people get it, great. You know, they're on my boat. If people don't get it, they can swim until they find another boat. You know, they're not getting on mine. Yeah, you know, I don't care. That's the beauty about all of this, is that there's things that I wish to experience, and there are things that I would like to do with this band, and it's not that I don't care the outcome at all. I care about my music 100%. I care about what I do as a human being, but I just don't care about what people think, you know, and I don't care how it comes across either. As long as the music comes out the way that I envision it to, then everything else is just, you know, glitter. because the music is what's going to live. It's going to outlive me. It's going to outlive you. You know, so if I'm proud of my music and what I put out there musically, then social media, photos, interviews, all that stuff, you know, it can be construed in a completely different ways, you know, because people have their own opinions and ways of understanding things. But music is always outgrowing people and always outgrowing previous thoughts and always evolving and reforming itself. And that's what's beautiful about it. It's always inspiring, you know. So if I can be inspired by my music, then hopefully I can inspire other people. And that's how it should work. Do you know?
I do know. And amen. I do know. I do know. Like I said, I've surrounded myself with a lot of like-minded people, and I hear this ideology, if you want to call it that, over and over and over again. The only art that seems to really work is when the artist says, this is what I am. This is truth for me. And put it out there and allow it to live. It's a living being. There was a painter, a friend of mine, who said, you know, I'll put a painting up and 20 different people will see 20 different things. And it'll resonate with some. It won't resonate with others. Some things resonate with everybody. But it's separate from me. And if I put my passion or my truth into that, that's enough. Because that's all we have. It really is. I mean, we put our intellect, soul, passion into the things that we do as artists and put that into a creation, then that's all we have. And sometimes I see other artists who do what we had talked about earlier, which is try to see what the audience sees and put the spotlight back on themselves rather than just expressing a true experience.
Exactly, and we didn't allow insecurities.
Yeah, I do understand it. I do get it. I strive to have more of those experiences in my art. The other day when we were collaborating,
one of the things that I did,
there was truth happening.
I never even thought about painting. Decided, you know, my sister was always a great artist. You know,
allow one another to have some input on what we created, and it was just truth. And it was a collaboration, and there was no filters there. It was like, yes, let's do that. Yes, let's do this. Yes, let's do that. What do you think?
Oh, this is perfect.
And what we got was something beautiful.
And I just couldn't handle the big ugly wall because paint was chipping, you know, and we didn't have the money to paint over. It's just chipping. It's ugly wall. So I decided, okay, I'm just going to go buy, a canvas and I'll just paint on it. And, you know, at the first Pin was like telling me, oh, you have to create something great because we're at the Icarus Artist Commune. And, you know, whatever you put down, you know, it's going to be you, you know, an expression of you. And I was like, leave me alone. I just got to like plant a flower or something, you know, just to put on the wall. You know, there's no expectations. Don't put any expectations on me. Let me just do whatever I want to do. Well, I ended up painting this incredible painting of my interpretation of me and Pin's souls in a painting. And I'd never done anything like this before. I'd never gone to a class or anything, you know, it's just whatever came out, you know, I have these colors, let me throw all these colors on there and just go with it. Well, I couldn't be more proud of what came out, let alone, you know, painting something just for a wall. You know, we ended up displaying it for the an art exhibit that we did, and, you know, people just were drawn to it. They were just drawn to it. And it was amazing how people would just stare at it and only have amazing things to say about it. And I've now painted, you know, about four canvases, because I've never had really any time, but I've painted four canvases four different styles of painting, you know, where one of them was a portrait, one of them was like this mess of ideas, you know, and every single one of them, I had no expectations going into it. You know, I wasn't thinking, oh, now I have to outdo the previous one. And every single one of them, the progression has been just amazing, you know, and I've been truly proud of them. And a lot of that has to come down with just the truth of what you are. Just, you know, you're an energy source that isn't just a solid thing. You know, you're an energy source that is constantly changing and fluxing and flowing. And to think that you're one side of you, you know, that you're one type of person, you're one type of painting, that, you know, you have to replicate and imitate that exact same thing, you know, it's just going to stifle you and get you frustrated. And allow that beauty to just keep overflowing and you know, allow it to grow. I mean, when I told you, you know, when I met you for the photo shoot, I was like, you know, I have these ideas, but I'm not stuck to anything. You know, let's just go with it. Let's just throw things on and, you know, just go with it. Just humor me in that aspect, you know, and have your patience with me because I don't know what we're going to do. And I love that you were just, yeah, let's just do it. Whatever, you know, we'll just have some fun. And the best outcomes come in those situations. You know, some people say the best outcomes come when you're under pressure. And I think that a lot of your abilities come out when you're under pressure, for sure. But I think if you're really loving what you're doing, you shouldn't have any expectations to it. Just allow yourself to live in that moment. And that moment will just keep repeating itself and growing. You know, it will be the blueprint for your future.
I'm just going to let that sit for a minute. And I'm really, really looking forward to seeing what happens with you and with Royal Distortion next.
Well, you'll be part of the process. I mean, I'm excited to see these photos come out that we did from the photo shoot, you know.
Yeah, I'll keep shooting pictures. I'll be coming to see the show. And so I'm excited to see what comes next for you, for sure. And I just want to say thanks.
Thank you, Ron. Thanks for being so cool. I'm so happy to do all of these things. It's great.
Me too. And we'll do it again soon.
For sure.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
I just want to say thank you once again to iQueen for taking the time to speak with us today. I really enjoyed that conversation, and I hope you did too. Just a reminder, Royal Distortion is playing on Monday nights at the Whiskey A Go-Go in Hollywood for the rest of the summer. If you haven't seen Isis perform, it's definitely worth your while. Go see this band. They are great. And once again, just a reminder, if you want to be on the show, if you want to be interviewed, if you want me to mention a product, or if you want me to bring up an issue that's important to you, shoot me an email at ron@venicevoice.com, or you can follow us on the socials at the Venice Voice Podcast. Tune in again next time when I will have another interesting human being that has some connection to this beautiful little place in which we live called Venice, California. Until next time,